everybody, and welcome back to Fueling Forward Friday. I'm your host, Maddie Alm, registered dietitian and former elite runner. Today's episode, I will be answering questions you all have submitted to me beforehand. And if you would like to submit any questions in the future, you can do so at my website, www.fuelingforward.com, under the podcast tab, or you can send me an email at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. Happy Fueling Forward Friday. I hope everyone has had a good first week of June. We're officially in June, which I know it's not summer until the 21st, but it sure feels like summer, doesn't it? This was always one of my favorite times of year, just because like school's getting out and summer you have more freedom, and it's fun. Even though I haven't been in school in a really long time, I feel the same like summer vibe that I see everyone who is in school getting to be on summer break feeling. So hope everyone's having a good start to their summer. Let's see, today's episode is a Q&A with me. So as per usual, or I guess as per sometimes, I just wanted to start off with just a random little thought of the week. So last weekend was Nick's birthday and we went to a movie out here. They were having this like director come and introduce the movie, really cool event. We ended up not getting in. We were the first two people in line that didn't make the cut, which was really disappointing, but that's okay. It happens. We watched the movie at home and it was great, but just not quite as fun. But anyway, when we were standing in line, we were in line for like 45 minutes, standing in the blazing sun, just dripping sweat. There were other people around us in line. Everyone was kind of chatting. And these people in front of us were talking to me and they asked, you know, what I do for a living. And this is always a hit or miss situation for me. When people find out I'm a dietitian, it usually goes one of two ways, where they're like, oh, that's so cool. Dietitians, wow, like, what do you do as a dietitian? Or I get the people who don't really know what dietitians do, and they assume that diet is, I put the diet in dietitian is what they assume. And so they immediately start talking about their diets or diet trends or whatever. So of course, this person who asked me, I know they were just being nice and making conversation, which I always appreciate, but you know, immediately they're like, oh, wow, that's so cool. This, you know, LA must be a great place to be a dietitian. There's so many diets out here that you can help people follow. And I'm like, sure. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, it was just kind of funny because I think I run into this a lot as a dietitian, and you know, sometimes people will be like, oh, you're a dietitian. Oh, I'm not going to tell you what I had for dinner right before this or whatever. Like, don't look at my plate. Which is so funny because I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what dietitians do, of course, as I've talked about many times. And I think we get confused with the nutritionists who do try to get people to diet. And I think there's a lot of like nutrition coaching out there that's given by people who are not qualified, and gyms will have like nutritionists that you can consult with. And you know, most of the time, people who are giving nutrition advice, I think especially on social media and just the people who are loudly giving nutrition advice, for the most part, I should say, are usually not qualified to do so. And they're usually promoting some crazy fad diet. And people are just assuming like, oh, they're so healthy, that's what I need to be doing. And I think there's just still so much, I mean, of course there is so much toxic diet culture still all around us that it's just a good reminder that a lot of people don't know what I do, and they don't know that I'm not the food police. I'm not going to tell them what not to eat. I don't promote diets. I don't encourage dieting. And so it's just, yeah, I think it's just a big misconception that I wish more people understood. But it's always funny getting, it's a mixed bag of the reactions I get when I'm in public, when I say that I'm a dietitian, to people that don't really know what that means. But I love having conversations with people about it. I love, you know, being there to help educate if they want to learn. I'm never gonna like get on a soapbox about it in public because it's just not worth it. But you know, if somebody asks what I do, I'll tell them. So yeah, anyway, I thought that was kind of a funny occurrence, because right after, when we didn't get into the movie, we went straight to the ice cream shop and got some ice cream to watch our movie. So bet that would have surprised those people in line that a dietitian was going to go get ice cream. A couple of Fueling Forward announcements quickly before I get into answering questions. I just wanted to remind you guys of two group programs that I have coming up. One is the summer boot camp series for high school runners. This one's going to be really fun. It's a short series, so the sessions are 4 weeks total. There's going to be one weekly 45-minute Zoom call, and we're going to cover different topics of sports nutrition for high school runners. So this will be things like how to build your plate for performance, how to build balanced snacks, what to eat before, during, and after training, how to hydrate, electrolytes, you know, all those kinds of things. I'm going to include a blood panel for every athlete that signs up, so that's included in the fee. You'll automatically get a blood work order and you can go get your blood drawn and I'll give you a personalized interpretation of your blood work. I think that's so hugely important for any high school athlete. Even if you're not part of this program, I highly encourage you this summer when you get a physical for the season, ask about getting blood work done, ask about getting iron checked. It's just something I've seen as a high school coach goes unchecked so often, and doctors don't typically get blood work done for teens unless there's something going on health-wise. So just being proactive, you know, if you're a parent or an athlete, advocating, asking, hey, can you put in an order to get some blood work done? I want to check my iron. And specifically, you usually have to ask for your ferritin to get checked. And then you also want to ask for a copy of your results. I've had countless doctors telling athletes, oh, everything looks great, and their ferritin is 10, which is not what we want. So just, you know, kind of educating yourself on what you're looking for and advocating for yourself to get some blood work done is huge. But that's why I built that into the program, because when I was a high school coach, we would have, oh my gosh, probably double digits of kids who come October, they started out the season really strong, and then when they started racing, they were like, something doesn't feel right, I don't feel good. We get their iron check, their ferritin super low. By the time we get it corrected, the season's almost over. So this is a good time just to be proactive and get those habits in place with your fueling, check blood work. You know, summer is also an easier time to work on your fueling because you're not in school. So you don't have to worry about timing your fueling around classes or if you have a weird lunch period or things like that. So it's just a good time to take advantage of time off of school. And it just makes it that much easier when you do get back to school in the fall to be consistent with those things. So that series is starting in about a week. So the sign up for the first session, which will run from June 16th to July 13th, the sign up for that one ends next Friday on Friday the 13th. And then that session will start the 16th and will go, like I said, through July 13th with one weekly Zoom call. And then you'll also have access to my weekly office hours where you can schedule a session with me one-on-one to ask any questions. And then the second session will run from July 14th through early to mid-August. So if you're interested in that, you can find those things on my website. You can find the sign up on my website. And then I'm also going to be starting a fall marathon group coaching program. So if you're going to be running a marathon this fall and you're wanting to work on your nutrition, this program is built for you. I'm in it with you. As if you remember, I'm going to be running the New York City Marathon. So we're all in this together. And I just want to create a fun group environment. This one's going to be a little longer. It's going to be a 12-week program, and we're going to cover, you know, everything from day-to-day fueling to practicing your fueling during runs to race day fueling. I'm going to have some guest speakers who are going to share their experience with the marathon, you know, guest speakers and other topics like sports psychology. So it's going to be really fun. That one also will include blood work and an interpretation from me so that you're ready for your training block. We catch anything early that might impact your training. So if you're interested in either of those programs, you can head to my website under the group coaching program section. You'll find both of those. Yeah, they're going to be really fun. I'm really excited about them. So let me know if you guys have any questions. And then the last announcement, as I've already talked about, the New York City Marathon, I'm going to be racing that this fall as a charity runner for Track Girls, which is a nonprofit that's creating resources to keep girls in sports, specifically in the track community. And so I am working on fundraising for them. and would greatly appreciate if anyone is interested in supporting me in this fundraising opportunity. I'm trying to raise $4,500 for Track Girls by November. So I'm going to put a link in the show notes where you can donate if you're interested. That's also going to be posted on my website, on the podcast page. Any and all support helps. So just would greatly appreciate if you guys would consider donating to help Track Girls and help me support them. About a third of their annual budget comes from New York City Marathon charity runners specifically. So really wanting to help give them those resources. And I know a lot of you listening, this is another organization that could be close to your heart with the resources they're providing. So would greatly appreciate any and all support. Thank you so much for considering helping me out. All right, so we are going to go ahead and dive into today's questions. These are some really good ones. Thank you again to everyone who has been submitting questions. I always love reading through these every week. I'm doing my best to work through as many as I can, but these are the ones that I chose for today. So our first question comes from Sarah. And Sarah says, "Hi, Maddie. I've been learning so much from this podcast. Thank you for putting this content out there. I've always used my period as a marker of health and proper fueling and have had an extremely consistent cycle for the last 10 years. For context, I'm 28. For the last year or two, I've been struggling with fatigue, but since I didn't lose my period, it took me a very long time to realize that underfueling was the cause. I upped my carbs and have been feeling so much better, but I'm wondering how I can catch underfueling before it becomes a problem in the future. What are other symptoms or markers that I can use to signal that I might be underfueling rather than just a little low on sleep, tired from a workout, or stressed, etc.?" Sarah, that's such a great question, and I'm really glad that you brought this up. I think I've maybe said this a couple times, but I don't say it enough. You do not have to lose your period to be experiencing underfueling or REDS, relative energy deficiency in sport. Those are things that can happen even if you are maintaining a consistent period. So I think that's important to keep in mind. You know, of course, it's going to be a red flag if you're a female athlete and you're losing your period. You know, it's becoming irregular, you're skipping periods, you're going long periods of time without them. That is certainly a red flag that's almost always related to underfueling or overtraining. But the problem is having a regular period doesn't necessarily mean that you are free from underfueling or overtraining or anything like that. There can still be energy imbalances that are happening that can affect your health without affecting your period. I would say, clinically speaking, if an athlete hasn't had a period for a long time, that tends to indicate they've been in a greater deficit. So usually the deficit is more extreme. We've been in that deficit for longer, and we're more likely to see it have an impact on other things like bone density. Whereas if an athlete is maintaining a regular period, then of course, you know, underfueling can still be an issue, but it's typically not as much of a deficit. Or it can be early stages of underfueling where maybe you haven't been in a deficit for long enough to have it impact your period. So I know that's like, oh my gosh, okay, so you're telling me that even if I have a regular period, that doesn't mean that I'm doing everything right. So how the heck am I supposed to know? Which is a really great question, Sarah. So a couple things that you want to think about, you know, REDS or relative energy deficiency in sport and underfueling in general, it's kind of an umbrella term. There's also a spectrum of underfueling. So for some athletes, it's, you know, 100 calorie deficit a day. For some, it's 500. It just varies from athlete to athlete, and it can vary from day to day too. You know, maybe you're getting enough fuel in on your hard days, but you're underfueling on your easy days, which adds up to a deficit over the course of a week. So there's a lot of different things to consider, and this is why I'm always encouraging athletes to be consistent with their fueling, to really narrow down those gaps during the day to every 2 to 4 hours, you know, making sure you're fueling before and after training, you're balancing your plates, those kinds of things will definitely help give you a little bit of a cushion if there's a day where, you know, it just doesn't go well. Because I also want to acknowledge that you're not perfect. You're not a robot, right? We're humans. We're going to have days where we don't have a great appetite, or we just didn't do a great job with our fueling because life got in the way. That's going to happen. You know, it's not the end of the world if that's happening occasionally. The issue comes when that happens often. So if we have a crazy work schedule Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and we get really behind on those days with our fueling, and then Tuesday and Thursday we're eating how we should be, we're going to be in a little bit of a deficit. In terms of things that you can look for with underfueling, again, this varies from athlete to athlete, but in my experience, what I've seen athletes notice first are things like sleep disturbances. So all of a sudden they're having a harder time falling asleep or maybe staying asleep. And in some cases they're noticing hunger at night when they're going to bed. Or if they wake up in the middle of the night, they might notice that they're hungry. For some athletes, it wakes them up early. So instead of being able to sleep in, they're waking up at like 5 a.m. and they're starving and they can't fall back asleep. So sleep disturbances that are new for you, I should say, all of this, any symptom I'm about to list, it means it's different from your normal. So if you normally sleep really well and all of a sudden you're not, that's a change that you want to pay attention to. Energy levels would kind of be the next one. So if you're just generally feeling more fatigued, you're finding yourself laid out on the couch all day after a training session, or like you sit down on the couch and you just have a really hard time getting back up, you just feel like you could take a nap any time of the day, that fatigue, that low energy can definitely be a sign. Another maybe more subtle one would be soreness. I say this to athletes all the time, but you shouldn't be getting sore all the time. If you're doing the same things every week, you shouldn't continually be getting sore from them. You know, the first time you lift or the first time you do a workout in spikes or the first time you do hill sprints, you know, it makes sense in those situations for you to be sore because you're asking your body to do something it hasn't done in a long time. But if you're lifting twice a week every week and you're getting sore every single time, that can be a red flag that your body is not recovering very well, typically from not getting enough resources back in or just generally seeing more muscle breakdown from being underfueled. So you're just sore all the time. GI issues can be another one for people. So normally they don't have GI issues and all of a sudden they're noticing like they can't get through any runs without having to stop for the bathroom. They're maybe experiencing more like bloating or discomfort after meals. Ironically, that can be related to underfueling. Loss or change in appetite. So if all of a sudden you don't have an appetite anymore, that typically means your hormones are starting to become impacted. Ghrelin is an appetite producing hormone. And if that's suppressed from underfueling, then typically we don't feel as hungry. Low iron can also disrupt appetite. And often low iron goes hand in hand with underfueling or not eating enough carbs. So there's kind of a couple things you can look at. Blood work can be another one that's maybe a more objective indication of underfueling. So if you're noticing that, like, let's say your ferritin, which is that marker of iron stores, if that one is below 30 and it's constantly below 30 despite supplementing and doing all the things, then usually that can be an indication that, okay, we're missing something that's not allowing your body to actually take that iron and create more red blood cells and improve that status. I think it is important to keep in mind that there's going to be times where you're tired. Like, again, like I said, we're not robots, we're humans, and things are going to happen in life that cause us to feel more tired. Maybe we didn't get as much sleep. Maybe we had a sick kid or a dog kept us up, or we had a friend's birthday party and we stayed out late. Like, it's okay to sometimes feel tired. And I think that's where developing that, what we call body literacy, so the ability to tune in to your body and check in with yourself, can really help give you some peace of mind and not just immediately jump to, oh my gosh, I'm tired, I'm underfueling. Being able to explain to yourself why you're feeling a certain way can really help remove some anxiety around those symptoms. So let's say like fatigue, for example, maybe I did the longest run I've done in a while on Sunday, and then Monday I had a really busy work day and was mentally feeling tired. And then Tuesday I was just kind of like dead. You know, that's not necessarily, oh my gosh, I'm underfueling. That could just be, oh, I had a really big 2 days. I didn't do a good job of prioritizing recovery. I'm going to make sure that today on Tuesday or whatever day, that I prioritize getting extra sleep. I build in some time for myself to restore and feel better on Wednesday. You know, if you make those changes and you feel better quickly, then again, usually that's not an indication that you've been in this long-term deficit. If we've been in a long-term deficit, we've been under fueling, it can take a little bit more time to feel like yourself again. Even if, you know, you start eating more carbs and right away you feel like you have more energy, some of those other things that come along with under fueling, like the hormone issues or bone density, those are going to take longer to restore. So just keeping in mind that there's going to be times where you feel more tired or you feel more sore, but being able to check in and ask yourself, does that make sense right now? Or does this feel like it's kind of out of left field? And how long have I been noticing it for? Is this new? Or have I been feeling sore all the time? You know, just being able to check in with yourself and acknowledging that you feel different or acknowledging why you might feel different is helpful. And then if you do check in and you're like, you know what, actually, I think I've been feeling tired for the past couple of weeks, and you think about it and you're like, oh, my training volume maybe increased and I don't think that I increased my fueling to compensate for that. You know, maybe you really focus on getting more carbs for a week or so and see how you feel. Being able to check in and catch it early definitely helps, but I'm really glad that you brought that up, Sarah. There's definitely different things to pay attention to, and every athlete is different in terms of the symptoms that you'll experience or what you might experience first, but just being able to check in with yourself daily and acknowledging what might be different, try to explain what might be different, and then making some changes to improve those things the next day, the best way to stay on track and make sure you're not slipping into those under-fueling habits. Okay, this person says, high school coach here, saw another high school team giving their athletes bicarb before a big race. Can you explain to all the high school athletes out there why this is stupid? There are so many other things you can work on before you go to the less than 1% things like bicarb, which also causes GI issues. Yeah, for sure. So, I don't know, I wouldn't be so harsh as to say it's stupid. You know, I think that I understand why athletes turn towards those kinds of tools. The marketing behind these things is absolutely genius. It's really good at convincing all of us that we absolutely need this X, Y, and Z to be successful. And it's kind of going to be this magic bullet or the secret key to unlocking your full potential. I completely understand why athletes will buy into that. I think that it's important to acknowledge that bicarbonate, which is what this person's talking about, sodium bicarbonate, is actually a well-researched thing. So the term ergogenic aid means something that legally can enhance your performance, a substance that can legally enhance your performance. So one that I talked about in the last Q&A is creatine. Creatine is kind of a known ergogenic aid. Sodium bicarbonate is actually another one. And this one, actually, fun fact, I worked on a sodium bicarbonate project in my thesis, which was kind of cool. We were looking at topical sodium bicarbonate. So it's a sodium bicarbonate lotion. And the idea behind sodium bicarbonate is that when you start working really hard, when you're working at a specific percentage of your VO2 max, when you're kind of on the edge, so think like, you know, 800, 1500, 5K, you're going to be feeling the burn from that lactic acid buildup. And the reason why sodium bicarbonate has been used is because it's a base. So if you guys think back to chemistry, right, we have like acids and bases and things that make things more acidic. So anything that has more hydrogen ions is considered acidic, and things that can accept those hydrogen ions are considered basic. So when we have lactic acid buildup, these hydrogen ions are creating more acidity within our blood. That acidity starts to interfere with how our muscles are able to contract, which is what causes us to kind of like seize up. Like we kind of hit this maximum effort that our body can reach. And if we can reduce the amount of acid that interferes with muscle contraction, in theory, we're going to be able to prolong that amount of time it takes to hit that point of fatigue or that, you know, point where our muscles can't work anymore. So that's where sodium bicarbonate comes in. It is a base, meaning it can accept those hydrogen ions that are floating around and neutralize them, meaning it's going to help neutralize the acidity, reduce the acidity, and in theory, help with performance. Sodium bicarbonate is also better known as baking soda. So yes, the thing that you would put in your cookies to help them rise. Baking soda is sodium bicarbonate. The problem with consuming sodium bicarbonate, as has been found by decades of research, is GI issues. If you try to consume a tablespoon of baking soda, that is not going to end well. It does not feel good on your stomach. Research has shown it causes a lot of stomach cramping, diarrhea, just symptoms you don't want to be dealing with in the middle of working out. So that's where this research study that I was a part of was trying to create a solution. Was they were like, let's develop this topical option that will be absorbed through the muscle tissue to help neutralize acid. And, you know, we found that it does help somewhat, but generally, like, the practical application of the results, meaning does it really make a significant difference in the real world, even though it looks statistically significant, was kind of hit or miss. And generally, that's what I say for most supplements is, like, maybe we can get a little extra boost in our performance from adding in a sodium bicarbonate, but is it worth it? Especially if we're going to have GI issues like this person acknowledged, which is absolutely true. So what recently came out is the Morton sodium bicarbonate system. So if you've heard of the company Morton, they have those gels, they have drink mixes. They're pretty popular in like the sports nutrition, sports performance science world. Their bicarbonate system uses this like hydrogel technology that's in their gel. And the theory behind it is that it's going to encapsulate the sodium bicarbonate so that it can bypass your stomach and avoid causing stomach issues and then be absorbed in the intestines where it's then going to be effective at improving performance. And so it is, you know, fairly effective. We've seen athletes who maybe previously have experienced GI issues with sodium bicarbonate supplementation not have that issue with Morton. I'm trying to describe what it's like because I had a teammate who would use it. And when we were, you know, we were together at an Airbnb before a race one time and she was a shorter distance runner than I was. So she was trying it out. It's literally a bowl of it's a big serving. Like it's a bowl of this bicarbonate jello and you're like eating it with a spoon. Like it is a lot. And I would generally say like probably not realistic for a lot of athletes to be able to get that down before a race. The other thing that's important to remember with things like the bicarbonate is that it's not going to be a substitution for fueling. So you wouldn't get any benefit from taking bicarbonate if you're not also fueling. The other thing to keep in mind is the distance that you're racing. So bicarbonate has shown to be effective for improving performance for short distances. So especially like the 100 and the 200, but as it gets longer, the effect gets less and less. So for example, for my teammate who was one of the best 1500 runners in the world, the difference of 0.5 seconds is the difference between making an Olympic team and not. And this athlete's going to be doing everything else they should be doing with their fueling, with their hydration, and getting that extra 1% makes sense. For most high school runners that I work with, like I just had a call earlier this week where the athlete wasn't eating before their runs. You know, that's where I would start. And I say this all the time with supplements, but we're not going to be able to get the benefit out of supplements if we don't have the building blocks in place to make them effective. So like I said last time, creatine, if we're not getting enough carbs and protein, we don't have the building blocks to build more muscle tissue. So creatine's not going to do anything. For sodium bicarbonate, if we don't have fuel on board before a race, that sodium bicarbonate's not going to help us. I would also argue it doesn't taste good, it's expensive, and it is pretty likely to cause stomach issues. In most research studies, at least half the participants experience stomach issues that negates the performance benefits of taking the supplement. So in general, like, could you try it? Yes. Is it harmful? It's not medically harmful for most healthy people, but it could harm your race if you have stomach issues for sure. So if you are wanting to try sodium bicarbonate, my suggestion would definitely be to try it out in a workout first and make sure that you can tolerate it, make sure there aren't any negative GI issues that happen from it. And then if you feel like it's helpful and it goes well, you know, sure, you can try it on race day. But my question to you is, are you doing everything else that you should be doing with your fueling? Are you fueling before and after all of your training sessions? Are you eating 3 full meals a day with 50% of your plate coming from carbs? Are you getting enough hydration throughout the day? Are you getting enough electrolytes? Those are going to be the things that are going to be much more worth your time and energy and money compared to just eating a bowl full of sodium bicarbonate before a race. So there is science behind it, but is it something that I recommend for most athletes? Typically, no. Okay, this next question says, if you were a postpartum runner, what kind of blood work would you recommend? What nutrients, vitamins, minerals, etc. do you want to check on? Side question, what is the easiest way to get blood work done? Every time I try and check my ferritin, my doctor makes me schedule an appointment to talk about it first, which takes months to get in before I get the blood work done. What other services would you recommend? Okay, so I want to preface this question by saying this is not medical advice. Make sure you're working with your doctor, especially if you're postpartum. Really important that you're seeing your doctor regularly and checking in. That said, as a dietitian, I have seen that pregnant women in general don't really receive the attention they deserve by healthcare providers. They're kind of just told, like, you know, like postpartum, you get one doctor's visit and that is it. And they're like, okay, you're good. Back to life. Meanwhile, you're giving all of your resources and then some to your baby, or you just did that for the last 9 months. And now if you're breastfeeding, you're doing it for longer. You know, you're healing, your stress levels are higher, you're not getting as much sleep. So there are so many things going on for women postpartum that unfortunately I don't feel, from what I've seen, that our healthcare system is built to address these issues. It's sort of, I mean, our healthcare system in general is more of like a triage situation where if something happens, then they'll be there to give you medication or admit you to the emergency room. But for everything in between, if you're generally healthy and fine, then they're like, well, everything looks good. So sorry, you're tired, you know, move on. And I do think that's a huge disservice. I think there's a lot of services for women who are postpartum that could really, really help them recover faster, that could help with mental health, just so many things to consider during this time. So one thing aside from nutrition that I just want to shout out really quick is pelvic floor PT. I highly encourage anyone who is pregnant or postpartum to consider pelvic floor PT. That is a huge one for just maintaining your overall health, being able to continue to train or run, whatever you like to do to feel good, to reduce pain, to help with healing. That is a huge, huge service that I encourage women to seek out, especially during, you know, prenatal and postpartum. From a nutrition standpoint, as a dietitian, if I'm working with an athlete who is postpartum, the immediate thing I want to check is mineral status. So I run a test called a hair tissue mineral analysis, and it's super informative. It's very different from blood work because blood work is giving us a snapshot of what things look like at that moment in time. And some markers that we check in blood are transient, meaning they can change day to day or hour to hour, depending on when we're checking them, if we trained the day before, if we're hydrated, you know, all those kinds of things. So what's cool about a hair tissue mineral analysis is it's actually kind of a 3-month snapshot of your nutritional status. So for a woman who's just been through pregnancy, it's going to be really informative of where we are in terms of resources and what we need to really focus on replenishing. So that's something that I have never heard of a doctor, traditional medical doctor, that's going to run that test. So functional providers typically have more of these tests that are going to give you a better picture of, okay, what can we specifically work on to help you restore your health? In terms of blood work, you know, they'll typically run a blood panel on you that's going to look at basic health overall. But again, it's not usually interpreted through that functional lens. So functional practitioners are looking for the physiological ranges at which your body is going to function optimally. So optimally being the key term there. Most health providers outside of the functional world are just looking at, do they fall within this very large, very arbitrary range? If so, you're good to go. It doesn't matter what your symptoms are. They're looking at numbers. Functional providers are taking into account your symptoms because what we tend to say is like symptoms trump labs. Like if you're feeling tired, it doesn't matter if your blood work looks like it's within the normal range. There's something going on there. You know, we have to kind of dig deeper or do some more testing. So those are things that, you know, I certainly do in my practice. I know other dietitians who focus on these things. There are postnatal dietitians, prenatal and postnatal dietitians, who are fantastic resources. This is kind of a tangent, but I think the same goes for fertility, right? Like a lot of women struggle with fertility and have not been given any resources to work through that. They're just kind of told, oh, you're a good candidate for IVF, or here, try taking this progesterone pill. And you know, while some people that's a great option and that's what they're looking for, I think there's a lot of things women aren't educated on in terms of what does affect their fertility and what are some things that you can do to address that through lifestyle factors before you have to go that full clinical medical route. So anyway, there's dietitians that are trained specifically in prenatal, postnatal, who are great resources for anyone who's trying to conceive or considering conceiving, just to help you make sure you're doing all the things to support fertility and pregnancy. I think working with a functional practitioner who can better help you address these issues is huge. I'm always hesitant to tell people to go get their own blood work done because unless you're a trained healthcare practitioner, I really don't encourage people to try to interpret their own lab results. You're not trained to interpret your lab results, but there are practitioners who are. So I think I want to preface it by saying that, but I also understand that it is difficult in our healthcare system to get the lab work that would be helpful for you and to actually have somebody who's knowledgeable in that area to help you interpret it. So there are ways that you can order your own labs. AnyLabTestNow.com is one. JasonHealth.com is another one. You can order your own lab work and pay out of pocket. So it's not covered by insurance and definitely will be a little bit more expensive. But like getting a full iron panel, so including ferritin, is maybe like $50, $60. So it's not crazy expensive. So that's a good resource for runners. If you just want to get your ferritin checked and make sure it looks good, you know, make sure it's in that range, then you could always go get it checked. And if you're noticing that it's not, or if you're not sure, using those blood test results to take to somebody who is trained that can help you interpret them, like a dietitian or a sports medicine doctor. I think too, if you're constantly having to deal with a doctor who's not listening to you or who's gaslighting you into thinking that, you know, oh, maybe it is in my head, maybe everything's fine with me, I encourage you to maybe search for a different practitioner who might be a better fit. I know insurance can be a really big barrier, but there are other practitioners out there who are better at listening, who can look at the whole person, take everything into account, and do a better job of giving you some guidance. So kind of a long-winded answer to your question, but generally if I'm working with an athlete who is postpartum, I'm going to be doing a mineral test, I'm going to be ordering a full blood panel. We're going to use those two things in conjunction to really target any and all deficiencies or areas that need support to help you recover faster postpartum. Okay, our last question for today says, hey, Maddie, I've listened to some of your podcasts and really enjoyed them. While I totally understand the underlying principle of your content about the importance of fueling and the danger of underfueling, does this mean it's always a bad idea to try to lose weight as a female runner at any age? While younger runners in teens and 20s and postpartum women pose unique risks, what about someone who is late 30s, early 40s, done having kids and is heavier than they've ever been, does not want the upward weight gain trend to continue, and is excited about training harder and focusing on their fitness as they age? I want to set a good example for my kids, but it's hard to get excited about racing and doing fast workouts when I'm at the upper end of what is considered normal weight range by BMI standards. Yes, I know, an imperfect standard, but not in danger of being underweight is my point here. While I know and expect my body to change with kids and age, it seems 20 to 25 pounds over what was for many years my healthy normal weight is a lot. I'd love to lose weight and gain fitness for the long term without undermining my overall health or establishing unhealthy habits. Listening to your podcast, however, I wonder if this isn't something I should pursue. I figure I can't be the only one wondering whether the goal of weight loss as a runner is always a bad thing. Such a great question, and I will tell you, you are not alone in that. I get a lot of people who ask me about that. They're like, oh, should I never try to lose weight, or is weight loss always an inappropriate thing for a runner? And I appreciate you bringing that up because, you know, a big goal with my podcast here is to educate runners on the importance of fueling. And that means different things for different people. And as a dietitian, the majority of the time, I'm seeing runners who are under fueling. So a lot of the symptoms runners are struggling with, including sometimes things like weight gain or body fat increases, are actually the result of under fueling. And I think that's the dominant issue in the running world is under fueling. And I think a lot of that comes from diet culture and the idea that we need to lose weight in order to be healthy and fit. So the first thing I want to say is that no, it's not always inappropriate to try to lose weight. You know, there's definitely situations where weight loss goals are great and definitely something that could be helpful for their overall health, make them feel better, you know, improve markers of health like cholesterol or heart disease risk or things like that. But that's not always the case. I think it's important to highlight that weight is not often an indication of health in a lot of people. There is a movement called Health at Every Size Movement, HAES movement. If you haven't heard of it and you want to look into it more, definitely look into that. There's like books about it. There's a lot of dietitians who practice this specifically. And what this movement says is if a person gets blood work done, they get their blood pressure checked, you look at their family history and everything looks normal, and the only thing that is quote unquote not normal is their weight, is this person really unhealthy? If they take care of themselves, if they move, if everything's looking good, do they need to lose weight? That's kind of a question in the medical community, and that's this idea of health at every size. Health at every size argues that no, weight loss isn't necessary medically. It's not going to change their overall health status. There's no reason to do that. So that kind of brings me to a question I often will ask runners who want to lose weight. Why are we wanting to lose weight? Is this related to health? So if the answer is yes, then absolutely, I'm going to support that athlete in doing this in a way that is safe and healthy and sustainable. So if an athlete, you know, if we decide that it's appropriate for them to think about weight loss, then we're going to make sure we're doing this the right way. And the right way is by not creating a huge deficit. So too great of a deficit, REDS and underfueling, as I just mentioned, which can happen, you know, even for athletes who have a regular period, REDS can happen for recreational athletes just as much as it can happen for professional athletes. REDS can happen at any size, any weight. It doesn't discriminate. Underfueling and the metabolic injury caused by underfueling is not specifically for small people experiencing eating disorders. This can happen to anybody. So even if an athlete's trying to lose weight, and we decide that's appropriate, I want to support them in a way that reduces their risk for REDS and underfueling. We also want to make sure that weight loss is happening at a clinically safe rate. So for most people, that's no more than half a pound to a pound per week, depending on the weight goals. Usually it's about half a pound per week is kind of the goal. Anytime we see immediate weight loss that's drastic or sudden, usually that means we're losing muscle mass, we're losing water stores, we're losing carbohydrate stores, muscle glycogen is decreasing. It's not a true change in body composition in the sense that we're not losing body fat, we're losing muscle. Sometimes we're actually working against ourselves with those goals. So, you know, there's a lot of things to consider if a runner is wanting to focus on losing weight and if that's appropriate for their health journey, then yes, there's certainly time and a place where that might be necessary, but not always. The other thing to consider is your timeline. So I will say, I don't recommend pursuing weight loss goals and training for a marathon, let's say. Like training and eating to lose weight are almost always the opposite of what you want to do when it comes to training and fueling to focus on performance. You know, if someone's trying to lose weight, typically that means things that are going to work against a lot of people when it comes to performance. Again, not always. Sometimes both things can happen. But if I have an athlete who there's no reason to lose the weight other than that they feel uncomfortable in their body, which I want to acknowledge is a valid thing. I talked about this in my newsletter. Body changes are hard and they can feel uncomfortable, and I completely understand wanting to change that. But again, the question comes down to why. Do we need to change it? Is this really something that's going to make us a healthier person? The other thing that this person points out is, I'm 20 to 25 pounds over what was for many years a healthy weight for me. I don't know this person's medical history. They may have been underweight, and being 20 to 25 pounds heavier now might be appropriate for them. I know for myself, I'm 20 to 25 pounds heavier, than I was in high school or even college, and that's normal and healthy, and that's where I need to be. And that's not, I'm not going to be doing anything to try to change that. So I don't know for that person if that's an appropriate amount of weight gain, if that means that's maybe too much. I don't know that. And I would say there's also no research to say if you lose 20 pounds, you're going to be healthier. Like Kara and I talked about this in her episode last week. Her coach told her to lose 5 pounds. That's just a number he pulled out of thin air, right? That doesn't mean anything. That's not going to do anything specific for your performance. There's no research behind that. So I think a lot of times the goal to lose weight or to change our body comes from struggling with change and struggling with body image, and not always from a place of, I want to improve my health. So I think that's an important thing to ask yourself too, is why am I wanting to try to change my weight? What's the motivation behind that? So I do want to acknowledge that there are going to be people where weight loss goals are appropriate, and that's something that I would absolutely support an athlete in pursuing. But most athletes that I work with whose goal is weight changes are surprised when eating more actually helps them achieve that. If your body doesn't feel safe, if it's under fuel, that doesn't feel safe to let go of resources, it's going to turn down your metabolism. It's going to hold on to body fat more to have extra resources on board. So it often works against us when an athlete's like, oh, I'm going to just eat less and train more to try to lose weight. That usually creates the opposite issue, where we're now storing more body fat. We're having a harder time building muscle mass. Our metabolism is lower. It just works against us. So even if the goal is weight loss, the answer is not always eat less, right? The answer oftentimes is eat more and eat with intention, eat consistently, avoid getting to the point of extreme hunger. There's a lot of strategies that I use with athletes whose goal is weight loss, if we've decided that's appropriate to pursue. And sometimes it is, sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. So maybe that's hard for athletes to hear, because it can be hard to accept body changes in general. And I think one last thing I want to point out, this person, I want you to know I'm not coming at you at all for this, but I think it's important when you're talking about you want to be healthy for your kids. What does that mean to you? And remembering that kids are sponges. They're going to listen and hear anything you're saying and internalize that. So if you're saying, ooh, mom's been bad today, she had 2 pieces of bread, what they hear is, oh, if I eat bread, I'm bad. Does that make me bad? Or, oh, I really need to lose weight. I need to change my body. Look at this body. Look at all this. Then they start to internalize that too and look at their own body and say, do I need to lose weight? Do I not like something about my body? The way that you talk about yourself, the way that you talk about food in front of your kids has a huge impact on their own relationship with food and body image. So anyone who is going through body changes in the middle of, a weight loss journey or anything like that, I think it's important to be conscious of the words that you're using, what you're saying in front of your kids, even if it's about yourself, because they will internalize that and it will impact them hearing you talk about food or your body in that way. So, instead of saying things like, I need to lose weight, or, look at this fat roll or whatever, you could turn it into something like, I want to get stronger. I want to feel better. I want to have energy to get through the day. Wow, look at this food that's going to be so nourishing for me. Or, oh, I feel better when I eat this food. This food makes me feel good. So trying to find better language to use if you're in that journey and you have young kids around, just being aware of how you're talking about it is something that I know parents of kids that I've worked with wish that they had thought about because they've seen how it's impacted their kid. And I've seen a lot of athletes who've struggled because of the way food and bodies were talked about in their households growing up. So Sarah Vaughn has a really, her episode from a couple weeks ago, she talks about how she sets boundaries around food and body talk with her family. And that was a really interesting thing to hear about if you want to take a listen. So yeah, just wanted to throw that out there as just some something to be mindful of if you're going through that journey. Talk kindly to yourself. Talk positively about food, because chances are, you know, your kids are listening. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. If you'd like to submit a question to be answered on future episodes, you can do so on my website, www.fuelingforward.com, under the podcast tab. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.